Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome one, welcome all to another edition of the SB Nation NFL Show podcast, Monday Football Monday. I'm Pete Sweeney, one of the hosts here, and I know you're wondering, why am I hearing Pete Sweeney's voice first? And that's because on today's episode for June 14th, there is no RJ Ochoa, and replacing him, we have the highly talented Niners Nation producer, Mr. Kyle Posey. Kyle, what's going on, man?
Moving on up in the world. Get to go with the big boys today. Monday Football Monday. I'm good, man. How's life?
All right. Right. You may not agree with this, but we need to say at the top of every show, this is the best podcast, of course, on the SB Nation NFL Show Network. And we got a good show for you ahead. We're going to break down the news and notes from the weekend that was in the NFL. And then the second half of the show, we are each going to name three teams that we feel will go from pretender to contender in 2021, breaking down our favorite offseason acquisition of those teams. So stay tuned for that. If you haven't yet, you got to do it. Please rate and review us on Apple iTunes or however it is that you listen to your podcasts. We need more reviews. If you leave us a review, we will read it on this episode. RJ does about three other podcasts. He cheats on Monday Football Monday all the time. He's got some kind of mixtape thing. He might read it on that show if need be, but we will read your review if you leave one. All right, Kyle, let's get into the news from the weekend. And it seems like all NFL news from a national standpoint right now starts in Green Bay, where the Aaron Rodgers saga continues. We know Rodgers skipped out on Packers mandatory minicamp, hasn't been happy with the team this offseason. And then over the weekend, we've talked about the Murph Man before here at Monday Football Monday. The president and CEO of the Packers, Mark Murphy, had an event at Lambeau Field. I think this dates back to Thursday, but this is what he said. I'm often reminded of Ted Thompson, as most of you know, just a great general manager, passed away this past year. Earlier this year. He often talked about Aaron, meaning Aaron Rodgers, and that he's a, and it wasn't just Aaron, a lot of different players. He would say he's a complicated fella. So I'll just say that. Not really, I think, what you want to be saying if you're the president and CEO of the Packers, if you're trying to come to some sort of pact, some sort of peace agreement to get Rodgers back in the building. When you saw this, Kyle, what were you thinking?
What are they doing is what I'm thinking. What do they expect Aaron Rodgers, who sure comes off as a complicated fellow, but we know that he doesn't like this type of talk. So we've seen reports come out that Jordan Love is ready to be QB1. And we've also seen reports come out that Rodgers is ready to sit out the entire season. So when we see things like those come out, and then the president comes out and tells us, well, he's a complicated fella, and they have no idea when he's coming back. This just doesn't seem like it's going to end anytime soon. And they just make a deal already, please, so we don't have to drag this out, because I don't know. I don't think it's going to end anytime soon. But what do you think? Do you think that Rodgers is going to be a thing?
This is a player who is, yes, the reigning MVP, 70% completion percentage, 48 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, playing the best football maybe of his career, even at the late age of 37. I just feel like when I see these news stories come out of Packers camp and from the Packers front office, what twilight zone are they living in? Like, they want to really go with a rookie who has never started a game in the NFL over Aaron Rodgers. You have to find a way to get him back in the building. And this is exactly what you don't want to do. And so I'm just so curious because, all right, so if you're going to start to say these things, this is going to make Rodgers want to come back less and less. This is a man who has said that he would probably host Jeopardy before playing for the Packers right. again in one way or another. And you're still going this direction. If you're going to start to say these things as the president and CEO of the Packers and throw what is considered or could be considered slight shade, why don't you just trade him? I mean, even though that you are lacking a little bit of leverage, that we're still talking about the MVP. So you're going to have multiple suitors. You're going to have multiple teams interested. You could still probably get a boatload for them. We're going to talk about the Denver Broncos, spoiler alert, in the next segment. And that is a team that it seems like they would be very, very interested in giving you a lot of draft compensation for Aaron Rodgers. So if you're going to start to take this standpoint where you have Murphy in an article the other day saying Rodgers has divided the fan base, has he, Murph man? Has he? Or is it about like 90-10? I can't imagine there's a Packers fan in the world that is like, no, it's time to move on from Aaron Rodgers off this MVP season. We're ready for Jordan Love.
Cater to your superstars, right? That's what you should do. That's what good organizations do, I feel like, where they're going to include him in maybe not making decisions, but hey, we want to do this. What do you think about? We might sign this person. What do you think about? And it just seems like Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers are so far apart from each other that this relationship seems all but over.
How did your Niners handle the Jimmy G situation better than Green Bay did? You know what I mean? It's unbelievable that like a team like the San Francisco 49ers, Jimmy G is fine. He's like, I'm going to play as hard as I possibly can in 2021 while being a mentor of sorts, taking that Alex Smith approach and trying to have the best season of his career. When he made a number three overall pick, like you would think that would be much more of a problem, much more of a trade me situation. But look, it obviously was something where you could tell in San Francisco, they had conversations with Jimmy G. He probably knew that this was coming and he's embracing the challenge. It is just a complete mess in Green Bay. Similar case in Houston as we wonder what will happen with Deshaun Watson. But we go now to New England, where there's another holdout of note from Monday morning. Patriots star cornerback Stephon Gilmore wants a new contract and is rehabbing from a partially torn quad. He was not present at the Patriots mandatory minicamp that was on Monday. I don't think this is a huge surprise. I mean, you're looking at one of the better cornerbacks in the league, and he probably doesn't want to risk even further injury without having a new contract in place.
Yeah, if I'm Stephon Gilmore and I'm rehabbing and I am one of the best cornerbacks in the NFL and I know that I'm worth more than I currently, you know, my current contract is, why wouldn't you want more? Because he's fresh off. I know 2020, you know, he missed five games, but the two seasons before, that was like a historically good cornerbacks seasons for in 2019, 2018. So if I'm him, yeah, of course I want to get paid more. And we just talked about catering to your superstars. Gilmore's 30, so he's at that time, you know, where cornerbacks tend to fall off. But I mean, not much of a surprise just because it's Gilmore. And this feels like it's been going on for years too. So all these holdout stories just seem to drag out. When does it come to an end? Do you think Gilmore is going to get a new contract before the season starts, or is this going to just go into the season?
Like I think the Patriots made too many moves this offseason to not figure this out. I think Gilmore is such a key to that secondary. You take Gilmore out of it, it gets a little bit shaky. I know they've made so many moves. They got some defensive pieces coming back because they did have a lot of those opt-outs, more so it seemed like than any other team. Also a note out of Patriots camp, I know that there had been some injury concern with Cam Newton, but Cam Newton is expected to practice. He should be fine. That's another quarterback and under the radar quarterback situation to watch. I wonder if Newton will be the guy this year. Really fell off, had that coronavirus situation with the Chiefs, never looked like at all a starter, a shell of his former self. A lot of that was blamed on him potentially being impacted by coronavirus. And now he has some young competition in the room as well. Mac Jones, who seems like a fit in that Belichick system, considering the ties to Nick Saban and the Alabama program. So a little bit of a battle to watch. I tend to think Newton, like in San Fran, might get the nod at the beginning of the year. But if suddenly the Patriots are like 1-3, Mac Jones maybe getting that call, you know that the New England fan base will demand excellence as they have now for the last two decades. And I just don't know if Cam Newton is that.
So a report came out over the weekend from one of the Patriots beat writers that Mac Jones was QB4 currently. And even with Cam missing practice over the weekend, over the last few days, that he still, you know, didn't climb the depth chart. So
this has to be Bill Belichick doing the rookie thing. You're not going to just come in here and get the second reps. I mean, look at the other guys in the room. I mean, it is Cam Newton. You can't put Stidham out there. We've seen a little bit of Stidham. You can't put it out there. We've seen the Brian Hoyer experience in multiple locations. If you're putting Stidham or Hoyer out there and like a realistic chance to be the backup quarterback, what are you? You're not trying to actually win anything. By the time the season starts, you have a floor for Mac Jones as QB2. I think we know what Stidham and Hoyer are, you know, by this point, at least in my opinion. All right,
Who starts first? Real quick before we move on. Starts first, Trey Lance or Mac Jones?
Interesting question. I tend to think Trey Lance, but it's close in my head here because my confidence level in Cam Newton and Jimmy G is about the same. I'm just not that confident. I think it's going to be very tiresome to watch these two quarterbacks very early on into the year. And so you could see the trigger pulled by week three for both. It might be a tie. They might come in the same second half in week three. Like they may be entering.
What a cop out. Come on.
What time are they playing? That's going to be the key of who enters the game. Somewhere around week three, they'll both enter the game. Whoever's playing earlier will get the nod. I know it's a cop out, but my confidence level in Newton and Jimmy G is just right around the same. And it's just not high at all. And you got some young, exciting, the unknown door is sometimes a lot more enticing than what you know already exists in some of these veterans. So I don't know. That's kind of, do you feel Lance gets to start earlier?
I do. I think he'll start earlier. And that's just based off, you know, history, because Jimmy has been banged up. I mean, he hasn't made it out of September, and I believe it's like three out of the last four seasons. So history would suggest that it's going to be Trey Lance.
It's been a while since I've been able to have a Chiefs story to discuss on Monday Football Monday, but we had something go into the national scene. That's actually usually a good sign for your team when you're not really in this national type of story where you're really only talking about your team on a local basis. But that was not the case over the weekend when Le'Veon Bell on an Instagram comment of all things, like this is a textbook offseason of how this story blew up is just amazing. Le'Veon Bell commented on what was a McDonald's post where on Instagram, where there was like a $700 McDonald's tab, really just having a conversation with the fan. And he said he would never play for Andy Reid again and he would retire first. And there was a lot of backlash, as you could imagine, because Andy Reid is one of the most beloved head coaches in the National Football League. And people were shocked. And now what's interesting about Bell is he's now had fallouts, you could call them, with Steelers, with the New York Jets, and obviously some kind of weird rift with the Chiefs. And then what happened is, as people were outraged by this, he got back onto Twitter toward the end of Sunday and he had even more comments, and I'll read you some of them here. He's just kind of correcting or overcorrecting himself. I said what I said. I don't regret at all what I said. For those of you who have a personal problem with me because of what I said, that's fine. You have your right. Just understand, I also have my right for how I feel about my personal problem with the dude because of what he said. Never did I say I didn't enjoy my time in KC because I loved my time there and was probably the closest locker room full of players I ever been around. I enjoyed my teammates, the city, the food, the fans, just about everything in KC. Went on with three or more tweets, but essentially it was just kind of backing up, apologizing essentially that he aired it on social, but still feels the same way, has no interest in playing with the Chiefs or Andy Reid again. And I just wonder what happened here. I'm on the beat, and every time Bell got to the podium and Andy Reid got to the podium and talked about Bell, it seemed like good graces. So this kind of surprised me a little bit, even though Bell was in a reserve role. Like, you had to know that coming in with the buzz around Clyde Edwards-Helaire. If you really wanted the playing time, I think you should have went to the Miami Dolphins. I'm actually surprised he's not with the Miami Dolphins already. But where this is interesting to me from a Bell standpoint, let's keep it national, is he's still looking for a team for 2021. And he wants to have some playing snaps, quite obviously, here. And I just don't know if coming out and saying something like, I'd never play for Andy Reid again, is going to help you. If you can't make it work with Andy Reid, how are you going to make it work with any head coach in the NFL?
I don't want to play with the best play caller in the NFL is quite a statement to make in the offseason when you do not have a job. I don't know what he was thinking. I imagine he was either lied to or he was just completely delusional, because if you walk into a scenario where a team just drafted a first round pick and you're upset, you're not getting the majority of the touches, that's a you problem. And mind you, this isn't just Clyde Edwards-Helaire. They have Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, right, and like a bunch of other different fast people who Andy Reid wants to get the ball to. So yeah, that's on you, Le'Veon. And I think he just read, you know, drank Kool-Aid too much and just maybe was just too high on himself.
He had said back in May that maybe he had to look for a defensive-minded head coach. And that makes me think to ground and pound it a little bit. And it's like, man, you had a contract with the Pittsburgh Steelers and they loved you, and you were, and this is kind of what you did to yourself. You go to the Jets, can't blame Bell for it not working out with Adam Gase, right? Gase is an aberration, I think, in himself, but just a very interesting scenario. And there's really only a handful of teams. Like, as I'm looking at the list right now, like the Atlanta Falcons, maybe could use a running back, the Buffalo Bills. We talked about the Dolphins already, maybe the New England Patriots. The Jets could, but they don't want anything to do with Le'Veon Bell. Maybe your 49ers. Like, but even with all these programs that I just mentioned, there are starters in place. So like, I just don't know what he's looking for toward. I mean, there's not an expansion team coming that's going to need all new players. I don't know the strategy. I just don't get the strategy of Le'Veon Bell, the player, right now. All right, let's move.
He's probably looking at himself as just prime Le'Veon Bell, and that's the problem.
Yes. Yeah. And has for a couple of years now. He hasn't been that since 2018. Pretty cool thing this morning. I thought I shared this with you, Kyle. Chris Godwin was actually the guest writer for Football Morning in America. And I always love when active players get a chance. It could be like the Players Tribune. Peter King, when he takes off during the summer, will have guest writers, and occasionally they are players. And just a couple of interesting quotes. I'm going to read through them quick and I'll let you react, Kyle. First, on the Super Bowl return, no one knows what kind of impact that will have, him talking about bringing back all the starters. But I think it's a really good thing because we felt like we hadn't played our best ball even in the Super Bowl. All right, Godwin, this is unbelievable to say, but we scored 31 points.
Let's talk about it.
But it wasn't a great game for our offense for four quarters. We know we can be better, and I think we will be better. Our offseason gives us a really good opportunity to do that. But anybody who comes in saying we're automatically in great position to win again because we brought everyone back, you're lying to yourself. Familiarity guarantees nothing except giving us a good starting point. I could relate to this. I covered a team who literally brought almost everybody back. I believe it was 20 of 22 Super Bowl starters, and they came up just short. And that was a depth issue. And you could tell, I thought the Chiefs last year, and I obviously watched them much closer than you do, Kyle, but I'm sure you caught plenty of highlights of the Chiefs. They looked a little bored in the regular season. Like, you really have to fight that boredom, especially when you were coming off that Super Bowl win, and the one bye changes that a little bit. Like, it's, I know they were able to run through the wild card last year. Henneke almost stunned the world. Let's not forget about that. But you want to put yourself in a position for that one and only NFC bye. And that means taking care of business in the regular season. So you just can't get complacent in that sense. And it's good that Godwin recognizes that.
I love that quote. I love everything about that quote, just because he understands what it takes. And yeah, as you mentioned with the Chiefs, it just seemed like they were going through the motions. They knew that they were good. They knew that they were talented, but it's just tough to get up for a game week in and week out. Whereas on the opposite side of the fence, every team that faces the team that just won the Super Bowl is going to give you everything they've gotten. So yeah, it seems like Godwin, he went out of his way to say, hey, we did score 31 points, but it wasn't a great, like, that was just funny just because, right, they really do think that they can get that much better. And it sounds like Tom Brady has a lot of impact on it. So he has a quote about that as well.
Yeah. Into the Tom Brady quote. As for Tom, we've thrown a few times this spring, Godwin said. His arm is so live. What I appreciate about him is the ball he throws is so receiver friendly to the touch and putting it right where you want it. I think mentally he has a good feel for the fact that he knows everyone isn't like him, because he's like, okay, on to the next one. But he's not forcing his attitude onto anyone. Now, if we get into training camp and guys keep saying, remember this and that from last year, then he'd say something. But I don't see that happening. We know what the mission is. And pretty clearly, Tom Brady changed the entire culture of the Buccaneers. When you talk about the Jameis Winston Bucks, and I like Jameis Winston. I like his new fixed eyes. I am excited to see what he can do with Traquan Smith in New Orleans this year. But that was just a different culture with the eating W's. I'm sure he regrets that, but it felt like, in a sense, like a joke. I don't want to go too far into that because they did win some games, but it felt a little bit more like a joke franchise where Tom Brady came in. And I remember Bruce Arians said last year, not ever really in history has one man impacted a team in such a good way so fast as Tom Brady was able to. And it just was an expectation of excellence. And you saw what they were able to do. I mean, I am always happy to say this. Patrick Mahomes, before the Super Bowl, had never lost a game by more than 8 points. And Tom Brady came out and they were scoring at will in that Super Bowl and the defense was dominating. And I think that is an influence of Brady himself. He demanded excellence both from the offense and the defense, and he got that in the most important game.
I think expectation of excellence is a perfect way to put it, just because think about the teammates. Think about who is surrounded by Tom Brady. They know if they mess up, Tom Brady is going to be screaming down my throat. I don't want nothing to do with that. And knowing that he's been around forever, knowing that he's won, there's just so much pressure to perform that you got to be in tip top shape. And I think that's probably the biggest difference that we saw. And sure, Tampa Bay, they didn't get off to like a great start last year. Their offense wasn't humming to begin the season, but you know, as the season went along, they started to get better and better and started to gel. And that's when you kind of saw Tom Brady and that offense take off.
Yeah. And Godwin didn't just keep it on the field in this article. Again, it's the Football Morning in America, the typical Peter King article where he has guest writers in the summer. In that things he thinks part, which is always at the end, I thought this was really interesting, especially with social issues at the forefront of our mind over the last calendar year on communication as a society. He said, I think as a society, we need to do a much better job of communicating. It's important not only to be able to have tough conversations with people you love / people that may have the same ideology as you, but also to be able to have civil discourse with people that have opposing thoughts to your own. It's hard to find a compromise on any issues if you aren't willing to actually listen to what the other side has to say. And I thought that was a really nice thought, especially for an athlete to go out and share that. And I think typically, you know, even in media, I think those who are most outspoken feel one way or the other. And rarely are they saying, no, we need to listen to the other side. So I just really like this message. And he had a couple of these really interesting quotes toward the end, and I encourage you to read them.
Yeah, that was great. And he's a 25-year-old. And I hate that we put this pressure on these athletes, these 20-year-old, 20-some-year-old athletes to come out and say this. But that was great just because it does matter. And I mean, I live in Scottsdale, Arizona, so you can only imagine the type of people that I talk to every day. But it's good because, you know, they judge a book by its cover. And right. I might do the same, but we are all having this civil discourse, as you mentioned. So when we are talking, it's just conversation, man. We're not trying to sway each other one way or the other. We're just talking, making each other aware. And I think that's what Chris Godwin's trying to say, that it's all right to have those kind of conversations with people that, you know, you may not be comfortable speaking with.
Yeah. And just such a talented player on the field and just a really well-written article. I know it's edited and whatnot, but I was just really impressed. So check it out if you haven't yet. And then finally, a minor note from the weekend, Miami. We had talked about Miami when it came to running backs, but they locked up a rising defensive star, Jerome Baker, extension, 3 years, $39 million. NFL Network and agent Drew Rosenhaus said it includes $28.4 million guaranteed. That's not a bad salary, Kyle. He's coming off a 7-sack season on really a good young Miami defense. This is Baker, one of these under the radar type of guys you don't typically hear about nationally, but makes a difference for them. Lines up in the box a little bit, also along the line. Brian Flores now is going into year 3 with this team, and you like this good young defense. The question really is going to be, how ready is Tua? You don't have that Ryan Fitzpatrick safety net anymore. I believe Jacoby Brissett is your backup. I'm not sure if he's going to be the closer or whatever, the closer quarterback that Fitzpatrick was when things got a little too heavy for Tua. So this is a big year. I think the expectation in Miami has to be, we need to make the postseason, and you see them lock up a defensive piece like this, they're ready to do that.
Yeah, third round pick from 2018, run and chase guy, really speedy. It's good to see him develop because he was always, you know, a good prospect at Ohio State. But I think it's always going to come back to the quarterback in Miami. So they should have made the playoffs last year if it weren't for musical chairs at the quarterback position. And if they don't get anything out of Tua during training camp, I would have Houston's number on speed dial because, who knows what's going to happen with Deshaun Watson or shoot, even Aaron Rodgers. But if Tua is not the guy, they cannot let him hold back that team because there are a ton of talented players and they had a really good offseason by, surrounding him with wideouts as well.
Yeah, I agree. I really would like to see Miami take the jump this year. And I think they have to. You're on that timeline where, we have the quarterback in place. We have the defensive pieces in place. Let's go and make sure we make the postseason. All right. That's the news and notes from the weekend that was in the NFL. When we come back here on Monday Football Monday, we will get into our pretender to contender conversation. Stay with us.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Back here on Monday, Football Monday, and you hear the pep in my voice, and that's because I don't have to hear RJ Ochoa talking about the Cowboys today. Pete Sweeney hanging out with Kyle Posey as we get into what is our pretender to contender conversation. So here's how this will work. We pick three teams that we like. Didn't have a lot of success last year, but we like them for one reason or another this year. We'll come up with the offseason acquisition we like the most from that team, the number one reason for what would be the come up, and where we think that team might finish in the standings. Kyle, I'll start us off with, and Chiefs fans are going to kill me here. I'm sorry. I apologize in advance, but I like the LA Chargers. The offseason acquisition I like the most is Rashawn Slater at number 13 overall. Some teams reportedly like Slater as the best tackle in the draft, even above Penei Sewell, who ended up going to the Dolphins at number 7. And he's likely to start at left tackle in year 1. And that's the definition of a steal where the board just falls to you at number 13. They were able to get this guy. And I think the number one reason for the come up is I watched Justin Herbert last year. I actually got to really enjoy the first start of his career because it was against the Chiefs in a surprise where they punctured Tyrod Taylor's lung. And then all of a sudden Herbert starting, you're like, oh, the Chiefs are going to win this game by 21. And it had to go to overtime because Herbert played that well. And he was so shockingly good. Here we are in year 2. Slater wasn't the only addition. They also got Corey Linsley and Matt Filer in free agency, who will also start. I also like Joe Lombardi as the offensive coordinator coming in, formerly with the Saints, and what it could mean for Austin Eckler. Because if he worked with Kamara in New Orleans, we see what they were able to do creatively in New Orleans. Who knows what they can do with Austin Eckler? You're getting Derwin James back, one of the better defensive players in the league. Haven't even mentioned Bosa and Allen. Asante Samuel Jr. is another name that I thought popped out from the draft. And the Chargers get hype every year. And it drives Chiefs fans crazy. But what I will say, and I can admit, is this is no longer Uncle Phil Rivers. This is a kid who I think at times looks like he can go toe for toe with Patrick Mahomes. I think they finished second place behind the Chiefs in the division, but they are able to clinch one of the wild cards. They see the Chargers making the playoffs. So that is my first pretender to contender team.
Herbert, 31 touchdowns. 10 interceptions, also ran for 5 touchdowns. That was in his first year, basically coming in raw, coming in cold, didn't really know what to do, didn't have an offseason. So that was pretty impressive. You mentioned all the offseason additions. Obviously, they brought over Brandon Staley, who the Rams, who they poached from the Rams, and the Rams had easily the best defense in the NFL. So yeah, if they can keep Derwin James healthy, because as you mentioned, we do this every year with a Chargers, so I can totally see why Chiefs fans are fed up. But Derwin hasn't played since 2019. So
to be fair, I said second place finish, wild card. Okay. I want to make that very clear to you in Kansas City.
They will come for you no matter what. Don't you worry. But yeah, they have a super talented team. It's going to come down to health. Will these guys on defense stay healthy? They did lose Melvin Ingram. So is the guy, whoever is going to replace him, whether that's Jerry Tillery on the other side, is he going to be able to produce? But the talent is there. And if Keenan Allen, Mike Williams stay healthy, Herbert's going to have, you know, now he has Jared Cook. You know, he's not going to have, what's his name, Hunter Henry there. But I like Eckler too. I think
they got a gigantic tight end in Donald Parham too, who I think is just waiting in the wings. And I'm eager to see how he works out with Jared Cook. They got a lot of weapons. It is always a case of health with the Chargers too. They have to stay healthy. You could say that about any teams. You saw that in San Francisco last year where they had a Chargers injury type of year. The Chargers need to stay healthy. That's first and foremost.
When the Chargers play the Chiefs, are you worried? Do you have some sort of fear knowing that Herbert is just a more dynamic quarterback and assuming that their defense is healthy?
Of the teams in the AFC West, the Chargers are the most threatening because of the quarterback. I mean, it takes a special effort. We saw it last year, but I mean, it takes a really special effort from Derek Carr to have a chance of being the Chiefs. I know they were able to swing it out of the blue last year. He just played a different style game than he ever plays against anyone else. Seemingly, I don't know why he got up for that game. He should play like that every week, but he doesn't. And then same thing for me in Denver, which is a nice segue. I just don't know if I believe as much in Drew Lock or Teddy Bridgewater. And that was why I was surprised that you had him as a pretender to contender.
I'm going with the Denver Broncos. I sure am. And let me be the first to say that I don't think Drew Lock is any good. And I don't think Teddy Bridgewater is any better. But they have weapons all over the place. And that's how you win the NFL. I feel like you just get mismatches on the outside. So I like KJ Hamler a ton. Jerry Jeudy is obviously going to be a very good player. He has to clean up some of the drops. And then they get Courtland Sutton back, who's a really freaking good player as well. He just has to stay healthy too. But
even Tim Patrick with those yards per target.
Yes.
They're four wide receivers deep that you like.
And then their tight ends, Noah Fant, who is a mismatch. And they have that Albert, a lot of letters in his last name.
Albert O. Albert O. Missouri. There you go. Missouri stands right up M-I-Z.
But I like what they do on defense too. You know, they get Von Miller back. They have Bradley Chubb. They made over their secondary. So they drafted Patrick Surtain. They have Kyle Fuller now and Justin Simmons. They have good weapons on the outside, good weapons in the secondary. It's just going to be about whether Drew Lock cannot be Drew Lock, which is why I think if we're talking quarterback moves, whatever it takes, whatever the Packers are asking for Rodgers, get him to Denver, because if Rodgers goes to Denver, you might be in some trouble, Mr. Pete Sweeney.
I understand that the Denver Broncos are right there. This is something I've actually been saying on the Arrowhead Pride podcast locally. If Rodgers or Watson goes to Denver, I mean, I already was saying how I think it is a slight two-team race, but you were looking at a three-team race for the AFC West, and the Raiders are going to be last. I don't know why the Raiders aren't more so in this mix. It just feels like they obviously should be, but they're not. And Denver feels like the real chance of a team of Watson or Rodgers going. I guess there's a scenario where maybe the Raiders could be a dark horse. Imagine if Watson and Rodgers came to the AFC West, then all of a sudden, I think you're looking at the best division in football. And I think that's fair to say. And so, yeah, I'm with you, but until I see a quarterback enter the fold in Denver, just hard for me to get it completely on board. My next contender, or I should say pretender to contender, is the Arizona Cardinals. The offseason acquisition I like the most. Come on. You got to know it. It's working out in that undersized t-shirt, JJ Watt, who they pair with Chandler Jones. Watt is one of these players in the league who reminds me of covering Tyrann Mathieu in Kansas City. I know this might not be 16 or 17 sack JJ Watt, but I think I could get behind like a 9 or 10 sack JJ Watt. And I just love what he means for the attitude of the defense. Like we were talking about with Tom Brady, there's just a new expectation of excellence that comes with JJ Watt and the pedigree and the attitude that he brings to the game. They drafted Zaven Collins out of Tulsa with their number 16 pick. And man, who better to learn from JJ Watt? The number one reason for the come up has to be Kyler Murray. Similar to what I said about the LA Chargers, he was a little banged up last year, but it's another year in the system. And you're working with the game's best receiver, in my opinion, in DeAndre Hopkins. AJ Green is now in the mix. Christian Kirk, Andy Isabella. You drafted Rondale Moore, who I know a lot of people liked. as a guy that they wished their team would have taken on day two. Let JJ take care of that defensive room and then watch the Cardinals do what they do in what is the second year with Kyler Murray. And where are they going to finish in the standings, Kyle? I'm going to do it. I'm doing it.
Let's put
the Cardinals first in the NFC West. Why not? I'm believing in Murray. If he can stay healthy, I think this is a team. The NFC West is always wide open, and there's so many random games where teams beat different teams. I think it's just a division that's ripe for a jump, and I'm going to go out on a limb. I realize I'm going out on a limb, but I'm picking the Cardinals in the NFC West right now.
So they paid J.J. Watt a ton of money this offseason, but for good reason. So he started 16 games last season, and you would think that he didn't start 16 games just the way people talk about him, because he was very good last year. But we have to talk about their head coach, who doesn't seem like he knows what he's doing. I think that's what's really been holding
him back. Except when he's at the pool and he's rolling up those sleeves and he's getting some sun.
When Cliff Kingsbury is not in a football stadium, he knows what he's doing.
No, without a doubt.
When Cliff Kingsbury has to make a decision that is right for his team in a crunch time clutch situation, that is not a guy who I would bet on at all, man. So we don't know what they're going to get from AJ Green. He seems like a ghost of himself. Larry Fitzgerald's not coming back, but they still have DeAndre Hopkins. They added Rodney Hudson, which will be big. But I just have a question mark about their secondary. So they don't have anybody that's really going to scare you. Yes, Buda Baker is a stud, but they signed Malcolm Butler at cornerback. They have Byron Murphy, Robert Alford. Those names.
Patrick Peterson goes to the Minnesota Vikings. Yeah, as a reminder, Peterson's now a member of the Vikings. So that is a key part of your secondary that you're losing. I think they had to have learned a lot from beating the AFC champion contending Buffalo Bills. Sometimes, Kyler, man, just throw it up to DeAndre, baby. Let him get it done. And I like this team. I think they're on the come up. I think it'll be a very interesting division. I am jealous sometimes of the competition that you guys have in that division last year, but everyone should be better, including the Cardinals. So we'll see. All right, let's get on to your next team.
Carolina Panthers. That's who I think. And I'm just going, you know, with these
middle. Chubba, Chubba.
Yeah.
You see what I'm doing there? You like that?
Yeah, there you go. I love it. Okay. So hopefully he gives them something, but they also have this other running back coming back. You may have heard of him, Christian McCaffrey. So Sam Darnold will have an option out of the backfield for the first time in his life. They have Robbie Anderson. They have DJ Moore. They signed Terrence Marshall Jr. out of LSU drafted him in the second round. So they have three legitimate weapons and McCaffrey for Sam Darnold. And then on defense, it's not going to be pretty, and I know that, but Brian Burns is going to take the next step into stardom. They drafted J.C. Horn, who I think is going to be very good. You mentioned Hubbard on the offensive side of the ball. I just think it comes back to Carolina being able to make a few more stops than they were able to last year. So adding, who was the guy from the Cardinals? Yeah, Hassan Reddick, that pass rusher, who I think it played a lot better than people give him credit for last year. So Burns and Reddick on the edge, got Derek Brown up the middle. I think the Carolina Panthers are going to be, you know, borderline contenders and might sneak into or just at least be competing for a playoff spot. So I'm going to go with Carolina. What do you think about that?
I think they're one of the more fascinating teams to watch in the league because they really put a lot of stock into Sam Darnold and bringing him over from the New York Jets. They kind of moved on from Teddy Bridgewater, said we can be better here. And the coaching staff has really bought into what Sam Darnold can do. And I think what's interesting about it is like, we haven't seen that. Now I know it has been the Gase effect, right? So we saw what happened with Ryan Tannehill when he got away from Adam Gase. He's one of the better quarterbacks, you know, these past 2 years. And so what is Sam Darnold? He's still a young guy. You know what I mean? And so that's where I think it's really interesting. Just the age of 24, gets a restart here. We saw quarterbacks get restarts elsewhere. Like, I don't know why this is coming to mind, but like Josh Rosen and where it wouldn't work out no matter where he was. But Darnold is interesting. I'm eager to see what Matt Rhule can do. You know, you talk about the Panthers. They did not have a great record last year, but they're missing Christian McCaffrey throughout the year. And when you go into the season with Christian McCaffrey, I mean, your offense is basically run through him. So that was a huge loss and him just not really being available. And so now he's back. He is supposedly healthy. So I think it's a nice come up pick by you. And a lot of it will have to do with, can Sam Darnold adjust and actually be the quarterback we might have thought he would be coming out of the draft?
Where are you going for your final pick?
All right, I'm going Cincinnati Bengals. Woo! This is the team that worries me the most. I can't lie, of the three. And it's because of the protection. I'll get to that in a second. The offseason acquisition I like the most. You know I love offense. I'm an offensive man. I love playing fantasy football. I love uniting Ja'Marr Chase and Joe Burrow. And I think that's going to be big. And I'll give another point about that in just a second here as well. I'm going to take Trey Hendrickson. The Bengals had the league worst in sacks last year at 17. Hendrickson had 13 and a half. That's almost as much as the entire Bengals team in 2020. Yes. And then when they were playing the Chiefs, the Saints, I mean, they had this thing called a bat game where they knew they had to batter the Chiefs if they were ever going to, you know, make a difference. And so just coming from that, the Saints always have this dirty attitude when it comes to defense. It used to be even dirtier, but I just think there needs to be some edge on the defensive side of the football. I think Trey Hendrickson brings that. The number one reason for the come up, it's Joe Burrow. I went on a limb last year on this program, and I said that the Bengals were going to go on this run, and then Burrow tears everything in his knee. His entire knee fell apart. I think, like everybody, and this is why they worry me, the protection is interesting. The LSU number, though, between Burrow and Chase is just stupid when you look at it. Understanding that I get it's the college ranks, 84 catches for 1780 and 20 touchdowns in LSU is really interesting. That seems like it could be the best 1-2 combo in the league now that you're uniting them at the pro level. That's just an unbelievable number. We'll see what they're able to produce this year. They went and got Chase and didn't get protection, as we said, in Slater and Sewell, who would have been available. So a little bit of risk there. If Burrow gets injured, this player personnel staff is going to be ridiculed to no end. Here's where I'll say for a finish. Give me third in the division behind the Browns and the Ravens, maybe a 9-8 record or a 10-7, which is just even weird to say. All three make the postseason in this division, in my opinion, because now you have seven teams. So Browns first, Ravens slightly behind, Bengals third, put them all in the AFC playoffs.
You love that orange Kool-Aid in Cincinnati, don't you?
You know I love the color orange. Yeah.
Burrow and Chase could probably complete passes with their eyes closed to each other. Like, they're going to have great rapport. And I love T. Higgins too. Very underrated last year. And then you have Tyler Boyd. So they have good weapons. As you mentioned, though, that offensive line, picking a wide receiver early in the top five, instead of an offensive lineman, knowing your quarterback just got hit 100 freaking times the game.
I know. They took a tackle with their second round pick, though, in Jackson Carmen out of Clemson. But it is not the same of taking a premium day one starter that you could have had there instead of Chase.
I'm not so sure that Trey Hendrickson is going to be the answer to their problems. He felt like more of a guy who benefited from his surroundings.
Like a flash in the pan? Good situation?
I think that he was more of a beneficiary of the guys around him and not so much of the Von Miller types we just talked about, where, you know, he just wins by himself. So I don't know, man. I hope you're right, just because, you know, it's the NFL and there's all type of parity. But we are talking about the Bengals, and the Bengals are going to be the Bengals to me until they are not.
Well, if there is ever a type of man or quarterback to get you out of those doldrums, I just think I'm buying the Burrow more than anything else. Like, that's my commonality in my three picks here. It's just, I like these quarterbacks. I like Herbert. I like Murray, and I really like Burrow. And even though I do worry about the protection, I like Burrow enough to say I think he could get them out of it and into some winning ways here in Cincinnati.
My three picks have been the opposite of yours as far as going for quarterbacks who are good. So why not keep it consistent and go with Washington's football?
Oh, the Fitzmagic.
Yes, I love him so much. So they finished 7-9. They made the playoffs, but they finished 7-9. So you can't really call them contenders. So pretender to contender. Terry McLaurin, stud, absolute star. Signed Curtis Samuel, who I love, 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 love. Have De'Ami Brown. So now you have three legitimate pass catchers, which has been a theme for the teams that I picked. But this defense is just lights out, man. They were so good last year. And then I think they upgraded by going from William Jackson from Ronald Darby to William Jackson. I think Fitzmagic is going to bring a little more clarity. As much as we talked about Alex Smith and, you know, him winning the comeback player of the year, Are we allowed to be honest here? Because on the Palpably Unfair podcast, we are very honest. And I don't think Alex Smith was too good last year.
Oh,
I think
wow.
Magic is going to be an upgrade.
He'll definitely be an upgrade. But you understand why Al got the comeback. Sure. Player. Well, the one thing that Fitzmagic will do, you know, is just throw it up. And Scary Terry is that good, right? So, like, he needs a quarterback like that that can get him the ball down the field.
Yeah, that's a perfect quarterback for a guy like McLaren because he's going to beat his man. He's fast. He's always downfield. They also have Logan Thomas. They have weapons, man. And I think, you know, in that division, they are just best suited to come out ahead. So I think Washington's going to take a step, the next step, and Fitzpatrick's probably not going to be the quarterback of the future, but he'll be the man to get the job done this season.
Even when Heinicke in there, though, I think he is the best option. I know that a lot of people were like, okay, well, Heinicke was able to perform in the playoffs, almost shocked the Bucks, as we had said, but Fitzpatrick is just reliable and he's a veteran and he's not afraid to throw it downfield. Dyami Brown is a really interesting receiver now that enters the league. We'll see what he can do in year one. I like their running back tandem too. Antonio Gibson and JD McKissick. And you are talking about what was historically the worst division of all time. And so it's not like the task feels tall. Now I know that Dak Prescott re-enters the mix. RJ Ochoa is knocking on the door or throwing the radio in his car as we poo-poo on the Cowboys a little bit. But this division does seem like anyone's ball game. And I think Ryan Fitzpatrick is a nice fit there. I'm eager to watch the Fitzpatrick Prescott game because that just feels like it screams shootout. And in the NFC East, you get two of those a year.
Yeah, and the difference is Washington has a pass rush who can get after the Cowboys. And I'm not sure Dallas can say the same thing, which is why I would pick Washington in a head-to-head battle.
So those are our pretenders to contenders. It's a six-way tie for the come up of the week this week. The LA Chargers, the Arizona Cardinals, the Cincinnati Bengals, and then Kyle's picks, the Denver Broncos, the Carolina Panthers, and the WFT. We missed RJ this week, but he should be back with me for next week's edition of Monday Football Monday. I want to thank Kyle Posey for joining us. Don't forget to leave us a rating and a review. We need him. We need him. We need him. All right. Have a good Monday, everybody.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.